Come on in. The listening is fine. The Carolina Outdoors is now in session. Bill Bartee right here. Wes Lawson right over there.
Hey, Bill. So earlier we were in the mountains, and I told you it was going to be a tale of two adventures. Now's the time for the second one.
It is so true, because it is cold outside. We know that no matter where you're listening to the Carolina Outdoors, whether it be in the Carolinas, maybe Florida, maybe Maine, as we blast up and down the eastern seaboard via the airwaves of WBT Radio or via podcast wherever you may be, or at jessebrowns.com, just punch on podcast. You can hear us there. On this segment, we're going to talk about one of the greatest sport fish alive in the world. It's a fish that lives in warm water, in warm places, and with a bit of imagination, you, the Carolina Outdoor listener, can go along with us stalking on the sandy flats of Florida, the Bahamas, Mexico, Belize, or many other places our guest is going to help us go. James Bice is a Southeastern rep for a bunch of cool fly fishing companies like Nautilus Reels, Solitude Flies, Scott Rods, and he's going to join us here on the Carolina Outdoors right now. James, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you know we love having you, partly because at Jesse Brown's we have a bunch of clients who are going all over the place. Even these days, whether it be the Carolina coast, we don't have bonefish there, whether it be the North Carolina mountains, no, not there either, but they're going other places. Warm places, Florida, the Bahamas, Mexico, the places I just named. And James, you've been to those places and then some in pursuit of fish. Will you talk to us a little bit about what the bonefish is for our listeners who may not know how hot, quote unquote, that fish really is?
Yeah, sure. They're pretty much a shallow water fish. I mean, they will spawn in deeper water, but they're an excellent target fish if you're looking to sight fish, which you know means you're seeing the fish before you're casting to it. In the shallow water flats of the places you mentioned, they like foot and a half to 3 feet of water. Really good game fish. They're just hard enough, but they're an honest fish. So if you do everything right, you can usually get them to eat. And they grow. You know, your average one depends on where you're fishing. Belize typically has smaller fish, as does Mexico. The Bahamas have a bit larger, and then the Florida Keys have, of course, some of the biggest bonefish in the world, especially around Alamorada. I think I want to say the world record's 15 and change, but I'm sure someone's going to write in and say I'm absolutely wrong on that. But they do get fairly large. Those fish are not common. You know, an average one is 2 to 6 pounds.
Well, you know what? I'm going to jump in there on that. So 2 to 6 pounds, a 10-pounder's big, let's say 14, 15 pounds is as big as they ever get. They can live up to 20 years or so in age. But when you say game fish or sport fish, let's go freshwater. You think about the largemouth bass and a powerful, strong fish with a lot of fight, a lot of jump. You can go up to the big kings that, James, we've talked to you about, the tarpon, and you talk about power and jumps and that sort of thing with the tarpon. The bonefish aren't really a jumper. You don't get to see them in the fight as much, but you sure do get to feel them. Will you talk about that difference so that people know that it's not a largemouth bass with the jumps? It's different.
It is. It's really more like a striped bass, just a little smaller, similar in coloration though. But you get a pretty long, strong run out of the bonefish. It's going to tax your reel. We have started using a little lighter weight lines just because the fish are getting harder to catch. But you know, a 6-weight, 7-weight rod, if you don't know what they're doing, you can get in trouble fast on a big fish. But they, you know, it's blistering runs. You get to see the fish sort of running away, but they're not an acrobatic fish like a tarpon or a largemouth bass at all.
Well, James, you know, we've had a lot of success outfitting our clients with the products that you represent, especially those Nautilus reels. And part of that is they're great. You know, they're lightweight, but they hold so much backing, and it's amazing. A fish like a 4, 5, 6 pound bonefish, how much line they'll take. So, you know, walk us and our listeners through how much one of those fish in a run might take off that reel. Why, and that's why we need such a good size reel.
Sure. Yeah. So a typical bonefish, let's say 4 to 6 pounds, they can run. A particularly hot fish, there's several different circumstances that are going to dictate how far that fish is going to run and how hot it's going to be. And by hot, I mean how it's going to fight. And a lot of that has to do with water temperature and the level of oxygen in the water. But in ideal conditions, I mean, a small fish can run 200 yards. A big fish, I mean, I've seen a couple of double-digit fish spool people with, 250 yards backing and, plus their fly line. So, I mean, you're looking at, over 750 feet total of line that those fish just pulled off the reel and never stopped.
The voice you hear right there, James Bice. He's our rep. Solitude Flies, Nautilus Reels, Scott Rods, joining Wes Lawson, Bill Bartee here on the Carolina Outdoors. We're glad that you're joining us as well. James, this is almost the perfect light tackle fish, and it's the perfect fly rod fish as well. Will you talk us through how the stalk works as far as you called it sight fishing or sight casting? So you have to see these fish first, which requires some eyes and some eye protection that helps filter the light in so that you can spot them in the water. But usually where do you see them at a distance? Is it 100 yards? Is it 200 yards? And then where do you start preparing for the cast? If we're using a fly rod, is it reasonable to expect a requirement of a 60-foot cast or less or more? How's that work?
Sure, yeah. I'll start from the beginning. So the first thing you're going to need are a good pair of polarized sunglasses that don't block out too much of the light. You want to cancel out a lot of the primary colors, because what you're looking for when you're seeing these fish in the shallow water, especially if they're over turtle grass or is movement and shadow, which makes it very difficult to see. They're, for me at least, one of the hardest fish in the ocean to see. And it's mainly because the way their skin is, it's mirrored, so they will actually they'll sort of take on the color that's around them through reflection. So you're looking for shadows, you're looking for movement, tail kicks, things like that. And this is if they're not tailing, because a bonefish will tail. They'll dig on the bottom, and when you see the tails, that's fairly evident. But that notwithstanding, you're looking for movement. You've got to have polarized sunglasses, and it's going to take. If you're not used to looking for them, with me, I've fished for them for a long time, and still it takes me sometimes a day to 2 days to get where I can really get dialed in and start seeing them. I've got friends of mine that are guides that can see them at 300 yards, and I sometimes can't see them at 20 feet. But that's somebody that does it for a living 365 days a year versus, someone like me. But we fish a lot out of the boats in Florida. In the Bahamas and Mexico especially, there's a place in Mexico, Scorpion Atoll, where it's all wade fishing and you're on an atoll where you go out 5 miles and live on a liveaboard. Great wade sight fishing. But what you're typically doing, you're looking for these fish moving either singles or in schools because they are a schooling fish. So if you're out of the boat, you're sort of stalking, trying to intercept them. You don't want to ever be behind them because you're not going to catch them. You want to try to get in front of them. Have the fish coming to you, not directly at you, but sort of at an angle, and then present the fly. Really, it's not so much the distance of the cast as it is the ability to cast in the wind with the wind coming from any direction. And which that's the problem a lot of people make when they're in the parking lot trying out a rod. They want to try to cast 80 feet with a fly line, but in reality, your cast is going to be 60 feet or under. But if you don't have a good back cast, which means you can present the fly on the back cast if the wind's on your strong arm side, or be able to cast into a, up to a 20, 25-mile-an-hour wind, you've just taken yourself out of 50% of the game.
Well, talk to us about taking ourselves out of the game, because I mentioned in the open a couple of times a bunch of different warm weather places that these fish live. In the shallow waters and in the flats where we can stalk them and sight them. But Florida, for instance, bigger bonefish down there in Florida. But James, if you mess up in Florida, if you blow a cast, if you throw it to its tail instead of to its face or right in front of it to some degree, you can be sitting down for a while. Because you don't have a backup of a big school coming behind them necessarily. Am I right?
It, it, it really depends on where you're at. There's some places where we target very large bonefish, and they will not tolerate more than maybe one and a, you know, one false cast. So if you're just up there shadow casting on the deck of the boat, you're going to blow your shot before the fly even touches the water. They will see the line in the air, and they're gone, and you will not get another chance. And then there's some other spots where the bonefish in the Florida Keys have come back in force. There was a big kill off at one time during a coal snap several years ago. But those fish are back, and we're seeing schools of 200 to 300 fish, 2 to 4 pounds, and it's really nice to see those fish coming back. And with those, you will get multiple shots if you don't blow the school out or be able to get back on the school and give yourself multiple opportunities. But, the first cast is always the best cast, and the best way to practice for them is stand with 5 feet of line in your hand and a bunch of line stripped out on the ground, and then try to hit a target in two false casts at 40 feet.
James Bice is right there. We're going to talk a little bit, James. I want you to talk about that compared to a place like the Bahamas, which is now open for people coming in. And in fact, going into the month of February, March, April, you know, the storm season is all done. It's not really hot. That's a great time to go to places like that. How does a place like the Bahamas, whether it be Abaco, Andros, Exuma, compare to what we have here in the U.S. in the Keys?
You've got a little easier fish just because it's such a large area, you're not getting the pressure on the fish, and also the fish are smaller. So a smaller bonefish, kind of like trying to catch a large largemouth bass versus a small largemouth bass. You can go to a lake and catch a lot of small ones, but it's hard to catch the larger ones, partly because they're more small ones than large ones, and partly because the large ones are a little smarter. But in the Bahamas, you can get a lot of mudding fish, which are fish that are just sort of feeding in a school, deeper water, and you see the mud coming up from the bottom where they're feeding, and you can just throw into the mud and strip a few times, and you've got a good chance of hooking a fish because they're on a feeding frenzy. In places like Abaco, South Andros on the west end, and the Barrie, some of the other outerlying islands, you do get larger fish that you're targeting, a lot of times singles or doubles, and there are some nice double-digit fish down there. The other nice thing about the Bahamas are you've got a really good chance at some of the lodges of catching a permit. Tarpon fishing, not really there, but you've got an excellent bone fishery and a really good permit fishery.
Now, James, you mentioned mudding, and, fly fishing, like every other sport and activity, we have our own language we like to talk about and talk in, and one of those is talking about nervous waters. Talk to our listeners about what nervous waters are, how to spot them, and what do we do when we see them?
That's kind of a learned skill. When you go out with a guy, they're going to say, it's your first time, hey, I've got some nervous water at 60 feet at about 2 o'clock. And you're going to look out, and it's going to look like ocean. And what nervous water is are these little ripples, and it's the fish underneath disturbing the surface very slightly. And once you get used to seeing that and understand what to look for, it's very evident. But it takes several trips before you're like, oh, okay, I see it, nervous water now. Because it's a very, very slight disturbance on the surface that usually indicates, fish directly underneath the surface. You're not going to be able to see the fish necessarily, but you can see that nervous water as it's coming to you because you'll see that just light disturbance sort of tracking across. And it can be windy, and you'll still see it because the wave pattern is going to be different.
So earlier you mentioned good polarized sunglasses. We touched on briefly a reel with some pretty serious line and backing capacity. What else, like what weights should fly anglers be looking for? What's your ideal gear kit for, let's say, Andros right now?
If I were going to Andros, I would definitely take, my kit's going to be a little different because I favor a 7-weight. I feel like most people are not going to be able to throw a 7-weight in the wind. I'm not an amazing caster, but I'm proficient. So that I would recommend a 9-weight. If they have one rod to choose, take a 9 because you can feather the cast in lightly, on calm days. But it's going to give people a little bit of a crutch when it's windy. But the biggest thing, more than line weight, is if a lot of people that fly fish golf and they don't go to the they're at the driving range a lot. They're practicing golf. They're paying for lessons. The best thing that you can do is invest in lessons and learn how to cast a rod properly. And then the weight, 7, 8, 9 is not going to matter as much because you're more proficient with the tool that you're using.
You're listening to the Carolina Outdoors here via the airwaves of WBT Radio early on a Saturday morning, also via podcast, wherever you may listen to podcasts. Lastly, you can listen to the Carolina Outdoors, this segment and segments previous to this segment at jessebrowns.com. And James, we have casting lessons at Jesse Brown's where we're constantly, you know, teaching, educating people on how to hold a fly rod, how to cast, whether they're going after brim, bass, the flowing waters of a trout stream, but also if they're going to the Caribbean or to Florida in pursuit of these saltwater game fish like the bonefish. You kind of fish these differently. There's cast or parts of cast called the double haul that is almost required if you're going to go bone fishing. Also, the hook set is different as well. It's a little bit more advanced, not to make it sound too snobbish, because we want people to go bone fishing and experience this. But after you have your casting lessons at Jesse Brown's or wherever, you learn how to do that. Do you think, and then we're going to the resort, some resort down in the Bahamas. It's not a fly fishing resort. We're on vacation with our wife or, you know, family, something like that. We see the flats out there. Do you think we need to go get a guide? Do you think that would help further us along? Or should we just go out there and Rambo it and kind of make it up as we go?
Well, in the Bahamas now, it's you can't be in a boat with two people from the U.S. and not have a native Bahamian guide in there. They've recently passed a mandatory guide policy in the Bahamas. I would definitely recommend a guide no matter where you go, especially the Florida Keys, because it's very hard. Mexico, there's not very many places in Mexico and Belize where you can just walk off the beach and go catch bonefish. There are in the Bahamas. Where you can go out solo by yourself and catch some fish. But, you know, there's a lot of softer bottom, especially in the Keys, Belize, and it makes it very difficult. Not to mention, if it's your first bone fishing trip, the value of having a captain behind you that knows how to spot the fish, knows where the fish live on particular tide cycles. You know, you can spend that's years of knowledge that you're going to be able to take advantage of in an eight-hour day.
It is amazing what a one-pound bonefish can do as far as the speed and that those fish have when they're stripping off your line and then your backing and that sort of thing. James Bice, thank you always for coming on to Carolina Outdoors and painting this picture of us wading across the flat, seeing these fish coming, casting to them, setting the hook, and then the fish fight that's in after that. We appreciate your time, and we look forward to getting you back on here and continuing our education on the Carolina Outdoors.
Hey, thank you guys so much for having me.
That's James Bice, one of our champion reps there at Jesse Brown's with Nautilus Reels, with Solitude Flies, and more. Wes, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and wrap this baby up.
Let's do it.
He's Wes Lawson. I'm Bill Barteague. You're listening to the Carolina Outdoors.